water is critical, as we say in the West. You know, whiskey's for drinking, water's for fighting over.
From Wyoming Public Media, this is The Modern West. I'm Micah Schweitzer. In the arid West, water rights can be a contentious issue. You might think of the Grand Canyon as one of the wildest places in the U.S., but the fact is the Colorado River that runs through that canyon is not wild at all. Here's a quote from the film Cadillac Desert, a documentary on water in the West.
This river, the Colorado, can be turned on and turned off, down to the last drop, on orders from the Interior Secretary of the United States. This was the first river on Earth to come under complete human control.
Wyoming Public Radio's Melody Edwards reports.
Rancher Eric Barnes and his family live on Fontanelle Creek, near Kemmer, in southwest Wyoming. It's a ranch his father built in the 1950s.
It's a really beautiful place because it's kind of in the foothills of the desert.
And it backs onto the mountains where the creek flows down to join the Green River in Fontanelle Reservoir. While droughts have devastated crops in the southwest over the last few years, Barnes was having the opposite problem.
I had been needing to rebuild all my diversions because they've been blowed out just from high water in the last few years. And I didn't know how I was going to afford to do all these projects because all the diversions needed worked on.
His flood-damaged irrigation gates were expensive to replace. So he turned to Trout Unlimited, who helped him turn his surplus water into a moneymaker. They helped him apply for a new multi-state pilot program through the Upper Colorado River Commission that pays water rights holders like Barnes not to irrigate. Wyoming Trout Unlimited director Corey Toy says while more flow in the stream will help droughts downstream, it'll also help Wyoming's wildlife that suffered from a 15-year drought.
In Wyoming, you know, agriculture and cold water fisheries overlay each other extensively, and in fact, some of our most important fisheries are on private land.
And Toy says, sure, Wyoming hasn't been hit by drought as hard as lower states, but it has still hurt some fish populations.
There are tributaries where we've seen extended low flows over the last couple of years.
Those low flows are threatening the extinction of several native fish species downstream. But Toy says high mountain ranchers are in a great position to help conserve the Colorado River for such species. He says after they've cut their hay, ranchers have water to spare.
These landowners that participated were able to increase the value of their private water right last season. There was a value associated with leaving it in the stream that the Upper Colorado River Commission compensated them for.
And compensated them well. Rancher Eric Barnes wouldn't say exactly how much he was paid not to irrigate, but the two-year program was funded at $2.7 million to go to a few lucky ranchers in the four Upper Basin states. Barnes was one of only five in Wyoming. Colorado River Conservation Director Steve Wolf at the Wyoming State Engineer's Office says it's not a new concept.
This type of program, system conservation fallowing, has been ongoing in Lower Basin for a long time. They do it basically every year. They're very efficient at it. We've never really tried it in the Upper Basin.
But river ecologist Ellen Wohl at Colorado State University says paying ranchers for their water won't protect the river's ecology forever.
I think it's a great idea to pay farmers not to use as much water or not to farm marginal lands. It's just a little bit vulnerable to economic fluctuations.
Like when the price of beef goes up and ranchers are less motivated to sell their water. She says the bigger threat to water conservation comes from states themselves. Governor Matt Mead plans to stockpile Wyoming's share of water by building 10 new water storage projects in the next 10 years. And the state of Colorado means to build more dams, too. That approach seems schizophrenic to ecologist Wohl.
If you view the Colorado River as an ecosystem, that ecosystem has to have a certain amount of water if it's going to persist. So you can't take all the water in the upper basin and basically have nothing getting to the lower basin.
Wohl votes for removing dams, not building more, since they block the movement of wildlife and sediment. She says it's time to let the Colorado return to its former shape, with more floodplains, pools, and curves. Rancher Eric Barnes says many of his neighbors consider this crazy talk.
A lot of people are skeptical because it's dealing with your water right. And you can't blame anybody for being skeptical because water's life.
He says personally he hopes the Upper Colorado River Commission decides to adopt the water conservation program permanently. He appreciates the fact that his hay still gets watered and He's got cash in his pocket. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Melody Edwards.
Earlier this year, promising bipartisan legislation concerning rural communities' ability to store water and improve irrigation systems came up for discussion on a national level. In July, Wyoming Senator John Barrasso helped introduce America's Water Infrastructure Act of 2018. Wyoming Public Radio's Matt Laszlo has more from Washington.
Most big legislative efforts have now ground to a halt in Washington ahead of November's elections. But Senator Barrasso helped craft a new compromise bill that's aimed at revitalizing the nation's ailing water infrastructure, which he says is vital for the Mountain West.
Water is critical, as we say in the West. Whiskey's for drinking, water's for fighting over.
The legislation attempts to boost local water storage capacity out west, while also assisting rural communities at risk of flooding, and it helps communities clean their water supply and improve their irrigation systems. Barrasso says it's a win for the state.
And we need to make sure we have the capacity and the storage in Wyoming. So, yeah, we have a lot of bipartisan agreement on getting the decisions out of Washington, back closer to home, so people on the ground can make decisions rather than somebody sitting in an office in Washington, D.C.
As chair of the Environment and Public Works Committee, Barrasso was able to include a lot of input in the new bill after hearing testimony from Wyoming residents,
including a county commissioner from Warland, Wyoming, Washakie County, to talk about the needs there that they have with ice jams and the damage that that can do. We have people that can talk about what's happening with the silt buildup. And you have that buildup in a reservoir, then the reservoir has less capacity for the water that we need during dry times.
The bill also seeks to update America's ports, which ship out a lot of Wyoming coal and natural gas. But striking a deal that makes urban lawmakers and rural lawmakers happy isn't easy, according to Barrasso.
This is something that takes a lot of commitment to get it done in a bipartisan way. You have rural communities which have huge water needs. You have coastal communities which have needs. In terms of the overall economy of the United States, the rivers and the ports play a tremendous role in moving product around the country.
Delaware Senator Tom Carper is the top Democrat on the committee. He says he, Barrasso, and others were able to go old school on the effort. Carper recounts him asking Wyoming Senior Senator Mike Enzi how he was able to forge compromises when he sat across from the more liberal Massachusetts Senator Ted Kennedy on the Health and Education Committee.
How do you work together to get so much done? And Mike Enzi said, Ted and I agree on about 80% of the stuff we disagree on. 20%, we focus on the 80% that we agree on. And on this legislation, we're focusing on the 80%.
Carper says the federal government actually plays a huge role in the nation's water infrastructure, which is why the legislation is vital.
99% of the freight that moves in and out of our ports in America, 99% comes through waterways that are maintained by the Army Corps of Engineers. Everybody has a dog in this fight. Everybody.
Other members of the committee also say they see no reason why the bill shouldn't sail to President Trump's desk this year, including Maryland Democrat Ben Cardin.
Oh, I think it's excellent. Oh, I think we have an excellent chance. It's got strong bipartisan support. It's in the range that is likely to get through. I would get 60 votes easily. I think it's a good chance.
Still, Cardin and other Democrats are disappointed the bill isn't included in Trump's initial call for a more than $1 trillion infrastructure bill that's now been shelved.
I think the scope might not be as large as we would like it to be because we don't have more revenues, so we have to keep it modest. But there's a lot of things in addition to money that's in this bill.
Still, Senator Barrasso says doing such a sweeping, expensive bill was never the game plan for him and other members of the Republican leadership team at the Capitol.
Well, we've talked about infrastructure being done piece by piece rather than one huge bill, and this is the first part of that. This is the water infrastructure bill. There will also be work we're doing in terms of bridges, highways, roads. So it's all part of the needs of the country. But right now we're very successfully moving ahead in a bipartisan way on water infrastructure, which is really important for Wyoming.
There's still no timeline for when Barrasso's water infrastructure bill may hit the Senate floor. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
Between growing populations and changing climate conditions, our water sources are only expected to get more crunched. Communities in some very dry states have had to get creative about where to get their water. sometimes purifying sewage into drinking water. More Western cities are beginning to get on board, too. But there's a problem, the ick factor. Colorado River Reporting Project's Ray Ellen Bichelle has the story.
Paul Rosin is a psychologist at the University of Pennsylvania. And for the last 30 years or so, he's been studying disgust, why people think things are gross. In one experiment, he asked people, would they put on a sweater that Hitler had worn?
And almost everybody says no.
So then Rosin asked people, how about if he thoroughly cleaned the sweater or dyed it to look different or even unraveled the yarn and made it into a new one?
And most people don't want anything to do with it, even if you do all that stuff.
But there was something that did get people to reconsider.
Mother Teresa.
If Mother Teresa put on the sweater first, then some people would consider putting it on too. That study might sound like the stuff of academic ivory towers, but
it really caught the attention of the water industry.
That's Brent Haddad. He's a water resources economist at the University of California, Santa Cruz. Haddad says water engineers had come up with amazing ways to turn sewage into clean, drinkable water. It was like finding a way to turn trash into gold.
And the public would have nothing to do with it.
So Haddad reached out to Rosin to figure out how they could conquer people's squeamishness. They ended up doing a series of studies together. And here's what they found.
Well, there's two strategies. One is tell them they've been drinking toilet water all their lives. Your toilet water goes out in the ocean, so does everybody else's toilet water, and then it's coming back in rain.
And what, he says, do you think river water is? A lot of it is just treated sewage from towns upstream. But that tactic, the whole world is gross tactic, doesn't work for everyone. Others need help ignoring the water's gross past. Haddad says we do this mental trick all the time, like when we sleep in hotel rooms.
There's a really good chance that that pillow was in places and in contact and having experiences that would just be appalling to the next person who comes to the room.
But, he says, in our heads, we tell ourselves, the cleaning crew came through. Everything's clean.
And we're perfectly fine sleeping on that bed. And we frame out any history of that hotel room.
Haddad says to frame out the sewage's history, it helps to explain to people exactly how it gets purified. The tech exists to make it safe and drinkable straight away. But he says most of the time, treated sewage goes back into nature first, like an aquifer or a stream, and mixes with other water. Then it gets pulled back out and retreated again for drinking. He says the idea of the water spending time in nature helps people ignore its less appealing past, just like they can ignore the hotel room's past.
And so people can easily say, oh, well, I'm getting the fresh stuff.
Another thing that helps is to show people that it's safe by pointing to other people who drink purified wastewater, like astronauts on the International Space Station. Their drinking water gets purified from all sorts of stuff: breath, sweat, urine.
Their game. Otherwise, they don't go up there.
Urgent need can also speed up the process, like a severe drought in West Texas that led the city of Big Spring to turn sewage into drinking water all in one go. No nature time necessary. At some point, people had to just drink it. And that's the thinking here at Declaration Brewing Company in Denver. Because while there might not be one single Mother Teresa for recycled water, beer comes pretty darn close.
What are you drinking?
Centurion.
Brewery founder Mike Blandford takes a seat on the patio with a freshly poured Pilsner in front of him. It's made with recycled water.
It's very crispy, refreshing, clean, nice dry finish. Exactly what you'd expect out of a very classic example of an American Pilsner.
Spokespeople with Denver Water say the city could be drinking recycled water in about 40 years. And less than an hour's drive south of this brewery, the town of Castle Rock is currently upgrading its water treatment plant to render drinking quality water from sewage by 2020.
It's absolutely the wave of the future. I mean, it's the right thing.
Blandford and his colleagues at Declaration Brewing want to help people prepare for that future before they run into urgent need, like Big Spring, Texas. And easing them in gently with a recycled Pilsner just might do the trick.
In Denver, I'm Ray Ellen Bichelle.
Now for a bit of recent history. Back in Wyoming, the Bighorn Stream adjudication was one of the longest-running lawsuits in state history. The signing of the decree back in September of 2014 is significant to the Northern Arapaho and Eastern Shoshone tribes because it gives them the right to use water from the Wind River that flows through their reservation for agriculture. After the decree was signed, those who were involved in the suit began looking to the future, installing fisheries and looking into if it's possible to use their water for something else other than just agriculture. Melody Edwards has more.
Northern Arapaho tribal liaison Gary Collins loads people onto a giant bus. He's taking them on a tour of the reservation's irrigation project that crisscrosses the Wind River Valley.
Off to the right is one sprinkler system of three that the Arapaho farm...
It's only early September, but true to form, it starts to blizzard. Through the falling snow, hay fields make a patchwork of green farmland.
These folks just got their hay cutting off the ground. I've got some hay down behind me, about a half a mile that's being snowed on right now. So what am I going to do?
And you can't bale wet hay. Just one of the many challenges of ranching in Wyoming. But you also can't grow hay without a lot of water. That was the thinking way back in the 1860s when the U.S. government built ditches to irrigate the newly established Wind River Indian Reservation. The idea was to turn the reservation's two nomadic tribes into farmers. Most of the irrigation project was built in the 1920s, but the federal government never properly funded the project's construction. In fact, it's still only 80% complete. And so when droughts came along in the 70s, trouble brewed. Manager Nancy McCann has been working on what's called the Bighorn Stream Adjudication lawsuit since it started.
In 1977, the tribes actually did write a letter to the city of Riverton saying, you have started to drill these wells. That's actually on reservation. You have to come to us.
Meaning that the tribes had to give permission to citizens of Riverton to drill new water wells on the reservation. At that time, the state engineer was George Christopoulos.
What he said is, no, you have to come to us. We're the state engineer. We administer the water rights. And before we knew it, we had the general adjudication statute, and then the case was filed.
Remember, this was 37 years ago. No computers, no GPS. Half the reason the lawsuit took so long was because it was a logistical nightmare. State engineer Pat Terrell.
Initially, when the suit kicked off, the state sent out 20,000 registered letters because every water right holder in the basin needed to be aware of what was going on. So keeping track of the mail at the beginning was a massive job.
It took two state Supreme Court cases just to figure out whether non-tribal heirs living on tribal lands should receive water rights. Along the way, there have been other problems, too. Poor communication between the tribes and state water officials. And former Eastern Shoshone tribal liaison Sarah Robinson says government agencies are dragging their feet to rehabilitate the incomplete irrigation system. She says it's losing almost half its flow. Non-tribal rancher Fred Tammany owns land inside the reservation boundary. He says some people aren't getting what they deserve.
We've had people down at the end. Sarah Robinson was one of them, and paid for water, never got it. I mean, that hurts. That hurts. When you got a $2,000 or $3,000 water bill, and now you got to go out and buy $5,000 or $8,000 worth of hay to feed your cows that you could have been growing yourself.
So Tammany started an organization bringing together tribal and non-tribal water users on the reservation. This month, they'll install three water delivery measurement systems on the ditches. And they've got commitments from the tribes and Bureau of Indian Affairs to match $500,000 toward work on the system. But Sarah Robinson estimates it will take $100 million to finish the irrigation system. Where that much money will come from, she's not sure.
But the system.
Everybody climbs off the bus and walks down a gravel road to the canal where a metal structure has been installed. A wide conveyor belt turns slowly. Gary Collins says it's a fish ladder to keep spawning fish from swimming into the ditches. The tribes have installed seven of them in the last 5 years. Each cost $500,000. Collins says it was worth it because it's not just the economics of water that matter.
We know that water is life, and we use water in our thinking every day, our sweat lodges, our sun dance.
Even with the decree signed, many wonder if it'll be another 37 years of hard work and disagreement before the irrigation system is complete. But Collins says a more efficient irrigation system means more water can flow back into the Big and Little Wind Rivers. And that means a healthier river for recreation and fisheries on the Wind River Indian Reservation. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Melody Edwards.
And that's it for this edition of The Modern West. We'll have a new episode on the third Tuesday of the month. And in the meantime, you can find more stories and episodes at our newly redesigned website, themodernwest.org. Taylor Stagner produced this show. Anna Rader is our web editor. The theme music is by Jeff Troxell, and I'm Micah Schweitzer. The Modern West is a production of Wyoming Public Media.